week ago, few, if any, residents of the Marco Polo building gave a thought to the fact that their units weren't equipped with sprinklers in case of fire. On Friday, a fire that began on the 26th floor and migrated to other levels of the high-rise killed three and sent another four to hospital. The building was constructed in 1971, and like similar structures that dotted the Honolulu skyline before 1975, the Marco Polo didn't have sprinklers. Fire officials said that had there been a sprinkler system in place, the fire would have been doused in a matter of minutes. Today on Town Square, we'll more closely look at the fire code, the sales implications for condos without sprinklers, and how high-rise residences without sprinklers might get them. Joining me today are former Honolulu Fire Captain Richard Sue and real estate analyst Ricky Cassaday. From 1976 until 2001, Richard Sue was a career firefighter with the Honolulu Fire Department. As fire captain, he headed the plans review section of the Fire Prevention Bureau and spent 4 years as the first full-time public information officer. Ricky Cassaday is an independent researcher. He analyzes real estate market trends and produces project feasibility and long-range planning studies for developers, landowners, investors, and public housing agencies in Hawaii and Asia. And, of course, you're here, too. And if you're a condo owner, did you think about whether there were fire sprinklers in your ceiling when you purchased your unit? And if there weren't, did you ever bring it up to your association? And what would you do if Honolulu were to require residential high-rises lacking fire sprinklers to retrofit them? We want to hear from you. Call us at 941-3689. That's 941-3689 if you call us on Oahu. And if you're listening to the live stream someplace else, if you're on a neighbor island and thinking about this issue too, we want to hear from you. That number is 877-941-3689. Richard Sue, Ricky Cassaday, welcome to Town Square.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, since last Friday's fire, people have heard a lot about the fire code. Just to give everyone, though, the same base information, what does the code require right now?
Right now, the existing code, there is a requirement to put sprinklers in existing high-rise buildings, but the legislature has seen to delete that portion of the code, so it's not required as a retrofit.
That's for condos and for high-rises?
Yeah, high-rises are defined as anything over 75 feet. Back in the 80s with the MGM Las Vegas fire, all hotels in the state have been retrofitted with fire sprinkler systems.
And for houses, single-family houses and duplexes?
Glad you mentioned that. Actually, the code would require new developments, private homes, to have a sprinkler system. But Governor Ige has recently signed a 10-year exemption to that portion of the code.
For which the BIA was rather happy, we hear.
Yes, it's my understanding. Just a caveat. 6 years ago, my home was destroyed by fire, and that wasn't – my home was built according to code, and the code right now would require not to have a sprinkler system. But because I didn't want my two boys to go through a fire again, I put in a sprinkler system on my own.
And how much did that cost you for your home?
So at that time, that was 4 years ago, I put in about $10,000. And at the time, I was putting everything new. So a split air, a Mitsubishi air conditioning system to my three-story home cost $12,000. So, and I think I'm realizing insurance benefits over the life of my home.
You know, clearly looking at the cost benefit for you, that was something that you agreed with and wanted to do and could afford to do. For some people who say, you know, I just don't have the money. We're going to talk a little bit about some ideas how that might be managed. Ricky Cassaday, you've grown up in Hawaii. You've seen the skyline change with many of these buildings. And also, you know, both of you have been here long enough to know that we've had some real issues over time with fires, not perhaps, you know, as dangerous as the one we saw on Friday. Is there any feeling within the real estate community as you talk about pieces of property and what people are sensitive to or not, that the fire sprinkler issue is something that they think about?
Well, I have lived here a long time, and my first remark is going to be simple and straight. We as a community really owe the fire department, as well as lifeguards and police, a great thank you. And one of the best parts to this story was that nobody was injured in those services. I have a brother-in-law who's a fireman, and they really go far and beyond what everything is. There's a couple ways to your question of how to look at it. There's the real estate, there's the political, there's the social. And because of my brother-in-law risking his life, that pushed me over the limit. I'm happy to look at the economics of where public policy mandates changes and what the costs and the benefits are. That should be done de rigueur. But it heightens when it's a matter of safety and you have people willing to risk or having to risk their lives to do this sort of stuff. This isn't, say, ramps up to your house to help either old people or...
You mean for ADA?
ADA, yeah. And for me, the really important thing to start off with is that in our community, most of our wealth is tied up in our home. In our community also, the incomes that we have relative to the values of our home are small. I mean, basically, we're a small island. We're a rural society. We didn't grow up next to a major city where there's high-powered, high-paying jobs. So our kapuna and below are mainly fixed income, and they're used to making do with what you have. You couple that with the real estate boom that happened in Hawaii right before 1970. So all those wonderful buildings at the tip of Diamond Head and a ton of other ones were built up in the boom that tourism begat.
And you're talking about a lot of those buildings along the Gold Coast, too.
Gold Coast mainly, because they really shriek. You could never do that again. But, you know, just as you go throughout the city, you will find building after building after building. And, in fact, when I walked into your office today, I looked at all the high-rises around me, and I did a short calculation, who has sprinklers and who doesn't.
You seem to be making both a practical and a moral issue, or argument at least. There's also the fact that when you have a condo, you are there living communally. I mean, that's what it's all about. So you're not just talking about a single-family home that where your house to be damaged, but even with a single-family home, that could easily migrate to somebody else's property. So you seem to say this is far more of a community issue than just a building issue.
That's a good point. And I'm sure, Richard, you've gone into both neighborhoods, but even more importantly, condos, and kind of looked at, from your point of view, what should be, and then ask yourself, why isn't? And it a large part would have to do with the community within that building.
That's correct. Part of being a fire prevention inspector is you have to be socially accepted by the building and its tenants. And, you know, we like to raise awareness and have people voluntarily comply with code. That's always the best way to get a code-compliant building.
We had a shy caller who phoned us as you were talking who said that it was William calling us from Kaimuki, saying that economic incentives would encourage people who live in apartments to retrofit. This could come from insurance companies charging higher rates for buildings without sprinklers or raising property taxes on those buildings because he says that they're dangerous to the community, making the point that we were just talking about. We're going to go now to Casey calling us from Lihue. If you want to join us, our number is 941-3689 from Oahu, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689, which is the number that Casey dialed, calling us from Lihue. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I am a reserve specialist for condo associations. So what I do is the long-term maintenance and budget financial planning. And most associations, I've probably done maybe 200, 300 condo association reserve studies in Hawaii. And most of these buildings we're talking about that are the buildings built in the late 60s, 70s, and early 80s that don't have sprinkler systems. Most of these associations that I've seen in the past are already dealing with major repairs that they were underfunded for, that weren't planned, like cast iron sewer lines that didn't last as long as anybody thought they would, that are incredibly expensive. A few years back, the code change was required. When you do a fire alarm system upgrade, you now have to put audible speakers to all the units, and that tends to run $4,000 to $5,000 per unit. And so it's going to be a really difficult financial hurdle for these associations that are already dealing with these expenses that were pretty major and not mostly not planned for, to get to additionally add sprinkler systems.
Casey, you seem to be talking about a whole host of issues that had to do with either lack of forethought or lack of longevity for some of the things that were done, whether they're, you know, roofing or anything else that a condo association has to pay for. Thanks very much for the call. I think Ricky Cassaday would like to answer you.
Yeah, actually, but to the silent caller, I wrote down insurance and property taxes as a way out of this, and that's kind of like the stick, a punishment, mm-hmm. and not a carrot. And so some of the solutions also have to look at what's a carrot to get these guys through. And that point is really made by this last caller, because you forget about the cascading needs of an older building. And he reminds you that often when you have a regulation that makes good sense comes around, that sometimes the regulation makers, city council or legislatures, they pile on. So, I mean, if you had, if you could take out the necessity to do audio, that is a tertiary need. A primary need really is that water system.
There are, you know, cities around the country. I'm thinking of L.A., Houston, San Antonio, Chicago, Philadelphia, back to the coast, San Diego, that are now requiring that high-rises have sprinklers regardless of the building's age. A lot of people are saying, well, okay, these are major cities too, some of the same issues, costly places to live, some of them, so why not Honolulu?
And I have some figures to share that the Honolulu Fire Department supplied to me. So 2006 to 2015, a sprinkled high-rise fire loss, total loss, resulted in $366,000. For a non-sprinkled building, the total fire loss was $4,500,000.
Which kind of goes back to the point that both our caller just made and Ricky Cassaday, too. I mean, that's an enormous difference from almost, say, $400,000 to over $4 million.
And that's correct. And to go on his efforts, Board of Water Supply, they could very well give some kind of breaks when it comes to the installation of the upgrade of the meters and the piping. That was the case. That was the most expensive charge for my protection system, was the Board of Water Supply charge. And that's within the ability of the city and counties to do that exception.
Which seems to suggest that there are ways of having various agencies and various folks who are involved with how you protect your home and who has interest in protecting your home in coming together to be able to make it a little easier for an average homeowner. I'm watching you just look at that, Ricky, and shake your head.
Well, no, I mean, I'm a naive guy. And of course, in building, you know, the cost of a water meter. But on top of that, and a water meter should be paid, and the BWS, as well as the electricity, they're utilities. And they are enabled, they're regulated, because you don't want them to gouge people. But on the flip side of them having a rate structure that's regulated, they are guaranteed a profit. That's what the rate does. You're guaranteed a minimal profit, and so as a utility, a public utility with a public service aspect, why I'm shaking my head and the lights are going on, I'm saying, well, why doesn't BWS kind of help to fund this? And you can spread the cost. You can spread it onto a particular area or a class of areas or just universally, because the number of that loss disparity is just staggering.
We're going to go now to a caller phoning us from Honolulu. If you'd like to be next, our number is 941-3689. If you call from Oahu, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Grace from Honolulu, welcome to Town Square.
Hello, host. Beth Ann, I'm so happy to be able to speak about this. I'm a property and casualty insurance agent. It's just a comment that I'm making. Anyone that has claims, whether it's your fault or not, especially major claims like this, is going to pay for it for their future insurance premiums. It's very difficult to insure someone that has a major catastrophic loss. It's going to be either hard to find insurance or it's going to be very expensive insurance.
Grace, can I stop? Grace, can I stop you for just 1 second here? Because I want to make sure everybody understands it. So let's say you are a condo owner and you have a building, you live in a building and there are no sprinklers. There is a catastrophic loss, and now you're going to buy something else. You're saying that the insurance for the new property, the one that wasn't damaged, place that's brand new to you, is going to be higher because you were involved with a catastrophic loss.
Yes. That's something that we research before we sell them any kind of insurance, if they've been involved in any catastrophic losses, and especially if the claim is not yet assigned to you, if it's still in litigation, a lot of different factors that affect your premium is very expensive if you have a catastrophic loss.
And what about for all of those people now in the Marco Polo building? The horrible loss, the most painful one was the loss of three people. But for everybody else who was in the building, some of whom didn't even realize that there was fire going on, those people are all going to have their premiums potentially increase?
It depends on the insurance company, and it depends on the level of loss. So there's different factors, but most likely they might be charged something because they chose to live in a place that there's no sprinklers.
So, there's the loss issue, but there's also the other ones who are living with the potential risk.
Yes. So it's very hard to, be in a situation where you're not aware of what could happen in the future financially for being in a situation like this.
Grace, thanks very much for the call. Hearing some of these other ideas that aren't necessarily coming out into a greater conversation about what it costs you in putting in the sprinkler, we talk a lot about that, but not what the potential cost factor would be to you in case you didn't have it and then you sustain loss, or even the fact that you might be living in a building that doesn't have a sprinkler system, and you might, in fact, have a higher premium because of the risk.
And the other question would be, what is the sheer valuation of those apartments now in Marco Polo?
It's a great one, and here's where we've been talking about social and community policy and politics. But the economics is really interesting because it drives a lot of decisions. And I smiled for a second remembering when I've done some pricing of condos, unit pricing. You price out the stacks and you have an accommodation as they go higher, 2,000, 5,000. I think Kapi'olani Residence was one
higher
of the
lower in the building.
The higher your unit, the better the view, the more you. But there's this interesting effect that when you get down to the bottom, the first and the second floor, those prices will be raised higher than the third, fourth, and fifth because people will say, I just want to live at grade or within
that.
So I
can get out.
So I can get out. And I bet there's a 75-foot rule, too, for the ladders.
Yeah, that's right. Just to share, ladders in the most optimum scenario can reach up to 7 stories. So you take that for your informational purposes, whether you want to live in a building on the eighth up to the eighth floor and above, or whether you want to live in a building from the 7th floor and below for fire protection.
ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go to the tax assessor database and I'm going to do a calculation of the 7th to 8th floor and whether the tax assessor so recognizes something that people innately out of, you know, the instinct for survival. That is a strong one.
What we're seemingly talking about here are several other permutations of this conversation that, in fact, may come back to haunt a lot of people as we move forward and see what condo associations choose to do or not to do. First, though, we're going to go to Matt calling us from Honolulu. Matt, I understand you're an architect?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I'm an architect, and I've actually been in discussions the last few days about this subject quite a bit. So,
you and everybody else.
Yeah. My Facebook page has blown up in the last few days. My only comment is that, not only, but my primary comment at this point is, you know, the premise of fire safety is to save lives, not to save property. It's to maintain a structure so that it does not, in an instance of a high-rise, progressively collapse and kill many people. I think it's, with all due respect to the people who just recently passed away, our hearts go out to them, but in fire-related deaths in high-rises, it's been extremely, extremely few in the last 25 years in Honolulu, compared to other risk factors that we actually have in our high-rises that are of that same age, particularly seismic upgrading of high-rises that are of that same era. If we get hit with major tidal wave action or other seismic activity, that risk is far, far more great to the high volumes of death and destruction than the fire conditions that we're under, because fire does have exiting, does have all the other things, but the collapse of a building from a seismic situation is far more serious. So I just don't want us to be myopic. I know we are at this moment because of the situation with Marco Polo, but it is an expensive retrofit, and there are many other retrofits that could take far more high precedent.
Which seems to, again, go back to the whole conversation we had a little earlier with I think Casey, talking about all of the things that older buildings need and so many of the retrofits that are required because the forethought either wasn't there or that the longevity for the things that had been done simply didn't happen either. Thanks very much for the context, Matt. Now, his point, you know, is the one that we hear a lot, that, you know, what's priority one when everything seems to be priority one? How do you rank all of this? Obviously, as you're coming at it from a fire safety perspective, this for you has, you know, great importance.
Unfortunately, you know, I'm a strong advocate for fire sprinklers. So my hope is that government, again, will give some tax credits or, you know, something that will drive it where these, unfortunately, these associations can really look at the dollar value and kind of put it towards what they really need. But my other comment is when you have model codes, and the model codes we're looking at right now is the National Fire Protection Agency, a strong driving code agency. When you adopt model codes, you should adopt them as a whole. And what happens, things are parsed out, and it's because of lobbyists or whatever drives you. And, you know, when you really think about it, it's kind of like buying a new car, but I don't want the tires. Something like that, along that nature, if I can be, you know, give you that example. That's the way I think. When you adopt a model code, you should adopt it in its entirety.
For those of you who have condos, we do want to hear from you. Was it at all important to you as you went shopping for your condo, whenever that was, that it have fire sprinklers in the ceiling? Let us know, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. And if you're currently selling a condo, has this become an issue now as you're talking with your agent? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, please use that number. If you're on the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689 is our number. That also works if you're listening to our live stream from elsewhere. You know, we've seen a lot of turnover. We see very little inventory sometimes, and people desperate to buy into something to feel like they got into the market. Ricky Cassaday, as you know, you've been looking at this now for a long time. Do people stop and really think about the sprinklers in the ceiling or not even care about them?
It all breaks down to income and whether you have shelter or not. If you're a first-time home buyer, if you're on a fixed income, if you're in a job that, your income is variable, there's a tremendous number of us that struggle to get shelter. So that you know, in your hierarchy of needs, which is why we have homeless, they've gone down to, well, do I need a roof or do I need food or gas for the car? And they've opted to live in the Naupaka.
Well, you know, but I mean, that's, you're looking at that particular group of people. But in general, if somebody's going to go off and pay $500,000 for a condo, or $340, you know, $340 million, I'm sorry, $340,000, or spend, you know, $4, $5, $10 million for a condo, then, you know, their list may get longer and with their needs, and I understand that. But even just a basic condo, even just looking at what the average condo costs, people who can afford that, are they really looking to see if there are sprinklers in the ceiling or not?
They probably look harder after an event like this, and they probably look harder if they've had something in their life history. You never know when lightning will strike, like the elephant that went crazy at the circus we were at, and we just went, whoa, who would have thought of this? But fire and height and all of those things, they're right there for you. They're a fact of life. Some people, particularly the wives whose care for their children is paramount. They, you know, my wife will tell me, you know, something like that. And that's a universal. But yeah, the richer, the higher the price of the unit, the more they cover all the bases.
And
go ahead, Richard.
If we can't shy away from the reality of fire sprinklers, is it a resulting fire will be stopped in the room of origin with a sprinkler system. So that's what we're really looking at. In Marco Polo, it would probably have been wherever that fire originated. So that's what you're looking at when you're really looking at buying into a building with or without sprinkler system, is if there was a fire in your neighbor or down a floor below that you don't even know and share walls, that in a sprinkled building, it'll probably be stopped in that one room. In a non-sprinkled building, you don't know what's happening in the entire structure.
Can I ask something? Somebody made a suggestion that you could self-install a sprinkler system if you had a condo. Does that make sense?
See, my understanding is Board of Water, they would probably require you to go from a half-inch domestic piping to a three-quarters inch. I don't want to, you know, knock the Board of Water, but that's my experience. And so you would have to get that kind of new system in your house.
Now, apropos to that, we have a caller on the line. Joan is calling us from Kona and has a question, especially for you, Richard Hsu, about a product called Sapphire, a fire suppression system. Don't know if you know anything about that in particular, but Joan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi there. It looks like you've done a little research.
Well, I heard about this, I think, maybe on 60 Minutes many years ago, and I was curious about that. So in just very brief research, it appears to be something that's manufactured. The product, the base product, I think, is a 3M Novec. And it's used in areas where you don't want water damage. It's supposed to be safe for electronics. I'm not trying to promote it. I just don't know much about it, but it's supposedly independent of a fire, typical fire sprinkler system. It doesn't use water.
Okay, so this would be something that you would use to try to protect some of your property, but wouldn't necessarily entirely stop a fire.
So set it up to be an automatic, you know, turn on thing that will activate when there is a fire.
My understanding in that is installations, like you say, for instance, the Hawaiian telephone building in downtown Honolulu, they went in for an exemption for their floors with electronics. They went in with a non-water system, but they would have to prove it to in this case, the HGA is the fire chief, and my understanding, it was proven. I don't know if it's that Sapphire system. But when I was part of the Prevention Bureau, I know that the Hawaiian Telephone Building during their retrofit was approved for that type of non-water system, but specifically only for the areas where their electronics, and of course they really needed to have that survive.
And any sense of whether that helped them out with insurance or not?
Sorry, okay. I just get as far as
I know that's
code.
Not your part of that, and that's fine. I want to throw something else out to you both. You know that Hawaii has the greatest longevity of any state. We've got a lot of people who are elderly here. We have a lot of older people in some of the condo units that, you know, Ricky, you talked about earlier that were built in the 70s, the early 70s, and who are still there. And yet these people have aged, as have their buildings. And in some cases, as we know from, you know, the rates of dementia and just aging in general, you know, what happens when you have a lot of older people who are in buildings and somebody leaves a pot on the stove and forgets? I mean, things like this happen. It's not something that we're just manufacturing. And if that were to just simply go to the logical conclusion of being left on a stove or something else that happens and somebody forgets, then what?
And time and time again, that's the general cause of majority of fires, unattended cooking. And unfortunately, not only in high-rise apartments, but private homes, unattended cooking results in fatalities. That same scenario, a poor, unfortunate elderly person just walks away and forgets about it. The other thing I would consider when you talk about generational, when it comes to the cost of this sprinkler system, yes, there is kupuna, elderly living presently in a lot of these condos with non-sprinklers, but they also have families. And once they, you know, it's the inheritance side. Can't the families help out with that one need to upgrade that $10,000 cost of what is it? You know, make it like, you know, back, pool their resources together for that one kupuna that's living by themselves. I don't know. There's just a lot of ways to look at solutions.
We're going to talk now with Catherine calling us from Makiki. We'd like to talk to you next. If you have a condo, were you at all concerned about whether or not there were those fire sprinklers in the ceiling, or were you just concerned about the price? Come on, be honest. We want to hear from you. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Catherine, are you there calling us from Makiki? Catherine, can we?
Yes.
You haven't been
yes.
on the now. Now you are. Now we can hear you. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes, I need to bring up this point that our lawmakers are demonstrating daily that they cannot provide adequate housing to the current generation of people. And now we have this horrible situation looking at people in housing, in buildings, and they're making up all the reasons for personal responsibility. This is not an issue of personal responsibility. It is a community-wide issue. It is a time for our lawmakers, our government, to step up and show that they can exert some responsibility in the area of housing for the population.
Catherine, we can hear the emotion in your voice over this issue. Are you in a condo unit?
I am, and I'm one of those people, as someone said at the scene of the fire the other day, I'm homeless now, or that's the person saying, I have no place to go. And that's the kind of issue that we're looking at, and here we have people talking about all the what-ifs and the wherefores, and people are just going to have to cough up the money. It isn't there. It isn't there.
Catherine, in your condo, do you have sprinklers?
No, this building was built in about 1971. It's excellently built. They just replaced the pipes, iron pipes, the water pipes, the last, it took about 18 months. And all of those plumbers, interesting enough, were from abroad. But the job was done. It was done beautifully. And the homeowner's fees were raised in order to provide for that. And that's okay, but there's going to have to be government support for that sort of thing. It cannot be left to the individuals.
Catherine, as you mentioned that you've just finished the pipe upgrade, was there any discussion among those in your association or among owners in general that you should have at the same time a sprinkler system retrofitted for your building?
I haven't heard that mentioned. I don't know. It may have been discussed at some point in the past because I find the owners who actually live on top of the building to be very responsible. And I'm just not sure. I can't answer your question.
Well, Catherine, thank you very much for your call. If you'd like to join us today, we're talking about fire codes, what's required, what you would do in your building if you do or don't have a unit with sprinklers. How does that make you feel? Are you concerned about what could happen in your community, not just a fire in your own unit, but what it means for everybody? And as my guests, both Ricky Cassaday and former fire captain Richard Sue, are suggesting, this is a community issue. Do you see it that way? 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu and from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. You know, it's tough to hear someone call with that kind of emotion in her voice and feeling like, you know, she would be stuck. She would be like one of those people who we saw outside of the Marco Polo who said, I don't know where I'm going to go now. I don't know what I'm going to do. In a situation like that, what kind of options begin to open up for someone, even in the short term, Richard?
Well, in the short term, hopefully it has to be passed by the legislature. So first that has to happen. So during that process, there should be consideration of this woman's plight, some kind of tax breaks, you know, whether it's a exemption on their real property or maybe just an outright credit somewhere. I'm at a loss, but I hope it happens. That's what I hope.
I mean, Ricky, you may not be able to live in your unit, but you're still the owner of record.
Ah, yeah. No, that's also a point. Yeah, you go from the grassroots and you're right. You feel for this woman. She's right there at the grassroots. You know, she is feeling, you know, exposed. And she asked the great question, which is, what are we going to do about this giant need? And Richard comes up with some good ideas. In most discussions that I like to engage in, there's the carrot and the stick. And the stick is the insurance penalties and a bunch of other stuff, the cost to the association to retrofit. But if you look at all the stakeholders here, BWS, fire department, the state, you know, and you go up to that level, those guys have much greater resources than we do as individuals. And if you try and think through what they can pool together and do, you might come up with stuff like, okay, maybe tax credit seems easy. The other one that occurred to me was, okay, somehow you lend them the money and you get it back when they sell the unit. It's interesting.
And would that be also applicable for someone who needs to have the sprinklers, you know, put in and there hasn't been an issue?
What you're trying to do within the building is get everybody's buy-in, and then you have a scale, economies of scale.
And in a way, it sounds like you're sort of amortizing this out over a period of time so that they're not having to front all this cash now, which becomes the barrier to entry to having a system.
That's the solution, all sorts of that, because it's tied to the real estate, and the real estate in Hawaii is always been desirable. Its prices have gone up. It's part of our problem, as you heard this poor woman saying, you know, we're all stuck in shelter, and why can't we get better shelter?
Well, I mean, she has a unit in a building that was built in 1971. She's in the same boat, ostensibly, as anyone who was in a building built in that time without the sprinklers, and yet her building just had the upgrade with, you know, the pipes. Really curious about this conversation. We have a lot of shy callers who have been phoning while we've been talking. Let me just say, I think you have answered in some ways. Mimi called us from Makiki and asking, really, what can condo owners without sprinklers do right now? We've been talking a little bit about that, some of the ideas to be able to decrease that barrier to entry by creating a system that would allow everyone to have it tied to the real estate, not having to, you know, front the cash now, so that maybe later on they're going to get paid back, but somebody's going to have to be able to front that money now, and that's what we'll talk about in a second.
The other thing condo owners can do right now, make sure they have a working smoke detector, make sure they know their escape from the building, and make sure they have a safe meeting place. That's what they can do right now.
Particularly if you're talking about anybody who is on the eighth floor or higher where those ladders can't reach. What really can you do? I mean, when you're in a situation like that and you know that there's not a ladder tall enough that's going to get you, maybe, you know, you have the fire alarms. Maybe you don't. Maybe you are just seeing it happen, or it's happening in your very own unit. What do you do? I mean, you've got to know how to put out a fire, too.
And then, unfortunately, with the older buildings, it's an older fire alarm system. So newer buildings, you have alarm activation, actually horns in the smoke detectors in your bedrooms that are sounding with the entire fire building. In the older buildings, they have only gongs on the outside hallway, so people might or might not even hear the fire alarm if it's not in their affected floor.
So make sure you've got them in every room in your house. So make sure you check them.
So nothing prevents you from putting a smoke detector that's only battery operated that will sound. The other thing is check the exit door to the hallway. You want to feel it with the back of your hand. If it is hot, don't open it. That means there's something the fire has mitigated to your hallway. So what you want to do is put cold towels along the seams. It's always the smoke. The smoke is the one that will kill anyone in a fire prior to the actual flame reaching them. And then go to a safe place.
All right. Chris from Lanikai was also on the line, a shy caller, asking whether it's really possible for fire trucks to get taller ladders, and what about the illegality of flammable materials, all of that that people might have in their houses.
Okay, when it comes to ladders, we're talking seven floors in the most optimum condition. So that means that ladder truck can reach the side of the building. Now look at Marco Polo. They had nice-looking landscaping that kind of, you know, emitted out from the building. So that would have prevented trucks from reaching the actual seven stories. You know, as a fire department, we will try to get to them as soon as we can. And so I would... That's why I really think fire sprinkles in a high-rise building is the way to go, because you just never know what the conditions are. There might be a car that day just parking right in front of your building. You just never know. You never know what can happen.
And what about highly flammable materials, even some that might be, you know, illegally so in your apartment?
And that's the question that's happening right now with Marco Polo, the investigation. Supposedly, with the construction at the time, with the building codes, it was supposed to compartmentalize the fire. So that hollow tile, along with the drywall, the actual makeup of the building was supposed to stop the fire within that apartment. Why it mitigated and destroyed numbers of units... Supposedly, it met building code. The question was that storage of flammables. So it takes a good inspection after the building becomes occupied, and it takes a good resident manager along with the first step is the management of the building.
All right, we're going to go to Brett calling us from Kamuela. Aloha, Brett, and thank you for your patience.
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. Kind of a question for the retired captain there. You know, really what we have here is a complex solution that has a low probability but a high cost event, and lives and property damage. And so it's always the challenge of these solutions that are, you know, black or white. And I guess one of my questions is there an interim solution that provides some knockdown benefit per unit in the case of an event? Kind of an earlier caller mentioned the Sapphire system. You know, could it, rather than having to retrofit an entire building, could we put in a modular kit per unit, for example, that has oxygen, it has a safety blanket, it has a fire extinguisher, and then maybe something like one of these minor suppression systems that might help, you know, just knock down a fire when it's very small. I myself have had to break into a neighbor's home to take out a fire that was on the stove. Somebody had left. So, you know, I have kind of firsthand experience with that situation. So question one is there some type of kit that could be put in per unit? And then just on a secondary note, I just had a conversation with the upcoming Speaker of the House just the other night. We were talking for about 45 minutes. And I want to just share that this individual really had a lot of honest, genuine concern for solving housing issues and concerns and societal. So sometimes the perception is that the legislators don't care, but I can say from firsthand they really do. And it takes the will of a lot of people to solve problems. So
well, we're going to see what kind of will becomes exerted after all of this and whether it's short-term or whether it is able to be sustained. Brett, thanks very much for the call. So, you know, he's asking a question to be able to save lives. Should there be a kit that would allow you to get through a fire? It's not going to maybe stop the fire, but it's certainly going to mitigate the loss of life.
So the way I would answer that is the separate codes, the fire code and the building code, they're what you would label as minimum codes. There's nothing that would stop the individual homeowner or the condo itself from doing those kind of practices, but it would just be, again, it's just a minimum code. So whatever they can do to help the situation, if something like that, those kind of kits, that would really help in any setting.
But I hear you say that's not a substitute for really confronting the issue of whether or not there should be sprinklers in your ceiling.
Yeah, because the code is a minimum code. So what happened is they deleted a portion of a minimum code.
All right. We had another shy caller, Jerry, calling us from Honolulu, asking if you could talk about deaths in condos versus single-family homes. Do you have some of the stats on that, Richard?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was the question?
Richard, Jerry from Honolulu was a shy caller asking for some information regarding deaths in condos versus deaths in single-family homes from fire.
Okay, so what I'm looking at is, of course, the most tragic single-family home was that Palolo fire.
Seven people.
Where seven people expired. So what I'm looking at is there, I'm sorry, I'm just not here yet.
I'll tell you what, while you do that, just in the interest of time, we're going to move on to another caller, Bob, calling us from Waikiki. And Bob, you had a question about that 75-foot ladder?
I had a question about that and one other. My question is, I guess it's the 75-foot ladder, okay? My building is 76 feet tall. So am I going to have to get hit with this because my building is 1 foot too tall?
No, again, it's optimum condition, so that doesn't drive any kind of insurance rating. It's just
I think he's talking about Mayor Caldwell's proposal that any building that doesn't have sprinklers already in it should be retrofitted if, it, in fact, it's over 75 feet. He says his building is 76 feet.
So from the definition of a high-rise, it's over 75 feet. But
would there be some mitigating circumstances in saying, hey, look, it's a foot over? What does that mean? I mean, to be like that would be more of a common sense argument that someone might be able
to
make.
So you can always go in for a variance, but that's what there has to be some kind of set. The set is nationwide, the definition of a high rise is anything over 75 feet. Going back to that other question. So for fatalities from 2006 to 2015, there was a total in all structures of 31 fatalities. Out of that, single families, there are 20 fatalities, and multifamilies, seven, high-rise, one with in sprinkles and 3 fatalities without sprinkles.
All right. Hope that helps you, Jerry. Thanks for the question. Very quickly, we're going to go to Tom calling from Lapa-Hoy-Hoy. Tom, are you there?
Yes, hi. And great subject with the sprinklers. But I'd like to, in a condo situation, you know, we really better be focused on what people are bringing into their homes as far as combustible material.
Okay.
That's a really big thing. Yep. Important.
Yeah, Richard Sue is nodding his head there. And forgive me for interrupting you, but we're coming to the last part of the hour, and I want to make sure that we hear his answer. Richard, he's saying it's not just a matter of, you know, what you got in your ceiling that might prevent a fire, but also what might be in your condo that might either start a fire or help it to spread.
And I agree, and that's correct. And by the fire departments are only obligated to inspect commercial buildings on an annual basis. And when it comes to private dwellings, because of we are unable to go into private dwellings. So the onus is on the property manager, the on-site manager, or whoever is the owner of that unit. If it is a rental, they just have to ensure what's going on in the building. And even the eyes and ears are really the adjacent neighbors. And they can report it.
And not just in terms of what drapery you might have on your windows, but also what building materials. And in some cases, that might be a little bit more difficult to find out if it's an older building, isn't it?
That's correct. And then, I mean, the other thing is the use. One apartment having so many visitors all hours, I mean, that could, and smells, that could lead you, maybe there is some kind of ice lab or something going on. Who knows what happens in a condominium? I mean, heaven forbid that's what's taking place.
We've talked a lot of issues today about what goes into this decision about having sprinklers versus electing not to have them. We're coming down to the last couple of minutes of the program. I want to ask each of you, you know, big takeaways for people who are in buildings without the sprinklers, just to kind of give them an idea of what are their options right now and why to do it. Richard?
Well, I'm really happy to have this conversation, and I'm very hopeful that this conversation will go on with our code acceptors, the legislature, the city council, the mayor, whatever, and that we can have more of this discussion and get – I'm an advocate. I think we should have retrofits in fire sprinkles in high-rise buildings.
And Ricky Cassaday, from – the financial perspective, just giving people a couple of ideas to walk away with and maybe talk to their associations about if, in fact, they're concerned that they don't have sprinklers and believe that they should have those fire sprinklers.
It is an issue that should be addressed by all the stakeholders, including the ones that you don't really see, like Board of Water Supply. And maybe there is something that you can do with the state agencies or the city agencies. Maybe they have cheap financing, work with the banks. Again, the whole problem, we are unsheltered people and people are with condos, seeing that expense are having a very difficult time. So you've got to look to alternatives. And by the way, I'm going to stop on my way home and buy a fire extinguisher.
Well, that's probably good news, and Richard Sue is nodding to that one. Maybe a couple of, you know, fire alarms while you're at it. But, you know, all levity aside, really, I also hear you say that we need to have a convener who will bring all of these different folks together and be able to have this conversation and continue it. And we will certainly stay on top of that. Thank you so much for joining us today for Town Square. Thank you to Richard Sue. Thanks to Ricky Cassaday. Thank you for all of you who called. Shy or not, we're glad to hear from you. I'll see you tomorrow for the conversation right back here at 11 o'clock. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.